There's several verses without purport. The verse on the board is verse number 62. So, I'll first read to you the previous verses, 57, 58, 59, 60, 61, and then we can chant 62 together. I'll just read the English. 57. All the quadrangles, lanes and streets in the city, and the raised sitting places at the crossings, were thoroughly cleansed and sprinkled with sandalwood water and auspicious grains such as rice and barley and flowers, fruits, and many other auspicious presentations were scattered all over the city. So, we're hearing description of Dhruva Maharaj entering the kingdom and how he's being received, how they prepared the city to receive Dhruva Maharaj. After he had performed his austerities in the forest, he's coming back and he's being received in this way, giving a very traditional welcome. Text 58 and 59. Thus, as Dhruva Maharaj passed on the road from every place in the neighborhood, all the gentle household ladies assembled to see him, and out of maternal affection they offered their blessings, showering him with white mustard seed, barley, curd, water, new grown grass, fruits and flowers. In this way, Dhruva Maharaj, while hearing the pleasing songs sung by the ladies, entered the palace of his father. Text 60. Dhruva Maharaj thereafter lived in his father's palace, which had walls bedecked with highly valuable jewels. His affectionate father took particular care of him, and he dwelled in that house just as the demigods live in their palaces in the higher planetary systems. Text 61. The bedding in the palace was as white as the foam of milk and was very soft. The bedsteads were made of ivory with embellishments of gold, and the chairs, benches, and other sitting places and furniture were made of gold. Translation. The palace of the king was surrounded by walls made of marble with many engravings made of valuable jewels like sapphires, which depicted beautiful women with shining jewel lamps in their hands. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The description of King Uttanapada's palace depicts the state of affairs many hundreds and thousands of years ago, long before Srimad Bhagavatam was compiled. Since it is described that Dhruva Maharaj ruled for 36,000 years, he must have lived in the Satya Yuga, when people lived for 100,000 years. The life durations in the four yugas are also mentioned in the Vedic literature. In Satya Yuga, people used to live for 100,000 years. In the Treta Yuga, people lived for 10,000 years. In Dwapara Yuga, they lived for 1,000 years. And in this age, Kali Yuga, people may live up to 100 years. With the progressive advance of each new yuga, the duration of human life is reduced by 90%, from 100,000 to 10,000, from 10,000 to 1,000, and from 1,000 to 100. It is said that Dhruva Maharaj was the great-grandson of Lord Brahma. This indicates that Dhruva Maharaj's time was in the Satya Yuga, in the beginning of the creation. During one day of Brahma, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, there are many Satya Yugas. According to the Vedic calculation, at the present moment, the 28th millennium is current. It can be calculated that Dhruva Maharaj lived many millions of years ago. But the description of the palace of Dhruva's father is so glorious that we cannot accept that advanced human civilization did not exist even 40 or 50,000 years ago. There were walls like those in the palace of Maharaj Uttanapad even very recently during the Mughal period. Anyone who has seen the Red Fort in Delhi must have marked that the walls are made of marble and were once decorated with jewels. During the British period, all these jewels were taken away and dispatched to the British Museum. The conception of worldly opulence was formerly based mainly on natural resources, such as jewels, marble, silk, ivory, gold, and silver. The advancement of economic development was not based on big motor cars. Advancement of human civilization depends not on industrial enterprise, but on possession of natural wealth and natural food, which is all supplied by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so that we may save time for self-realization and success in the human form of body. Another aspect of this verse is that Dhruva Maharaj's father, Uttanapad, would very soon give up attachment for his palaces and would go to the forest for self-realization. From the description of Srimad Bhagavatam, therefore, we can make a very thorough, comprehensive study of modern civilization and the civilization of mankind in the other millenniums, Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, and Dwapara Yuga. Translation again. The palace of the king was surrounded by walls made of marble, with many engravings made of valuable jewels like sapphires, which depicted beautiful women with shining jewel lamps in their hands. Om Ajnana Timarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chaksur Unmilitan Yena Tasmai Shri Guru Namaha. We're hearing from the fourth canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, the narration of Dhruva Maharaj is being described by Maitreya Muni to Vidura, and they have now reached the point where Dhruva Maharaj has completed his austerities in the forest, and he's returning home to a wonderful welcome. The verse particularly, which Prabhupada has given an elaborate purport on today, is in relation to the opulence of Dhruva Maharaj's father's residence, his palace. Dhruva Maharaj is described as being the great grandson of Brahma. Dhruva's father is Maharaj Uttanapad. Uttanapad had one brother, Priyavrat. His description is also coming in Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, Uttanapad and Priyavrat were the sons of Manu, and Manu was born from Lord Brahma. Swayambhuva Manu, the first Manu in the day of Brahma. In one day of Brahma, we have 14 Manus. So, Srila Prabhupada explains, Dhruva Maharaj appeared in the Satya Yuga. The Srimad Bhagavatam describes that Dhruva Maharaj went on to rule the world for 36,000 years. So Srila Prabhupada confirms that this is expected because in the Satya Yuga, life duration was 100,000 years. We see other examples of Kardama Muni, for example, who was married to the sister of Uttanapad, Devahuti. Kardama Muni lived in the forest. He performed austerities there for 40,000 years before his marriage. Before you get married also, you can do some austerity. We don't expect 40,000 years, but it's very good. Prepare yourself. Austerity is very purifying for everyone. Just as Dhruva Maharaj, in his very childhood, accepted a life of austerity in the beginning, going to the forest. Of course, for material purposes, for material gain. He wanted to get a big kingdom. But that was regretted later on by him. He changed his mind. So, Prabhupada is stressing to us that in the Satya Yuga, people had a very long duration of life. Not only did they have a long duration of life, but there was considerable opulence in the world at that time. The opulence of the world was not measured by simply having a big motor car, Prabhupada says. One country I visit in the Middle East, the island of Bahrain. They have a ruler there, and one of our devotees is working under the service of the ruler, taking care of his cars. He has 36 cars. So that is what people think is opulence in the Kali Yuga. You have a big fleet of cars. You know, now in India also we're seeing so many cars. Yeah? And they're going to be more and more. And is it making the country more opulent? Can we think the life has improved so much? No, the real opulence is not measured by simply having motor cars running around, burning fuel and polluting the atmosphere, and then also terrible noise vibrations, sound vibrations, noise pollution, air pollution, and so many other dangers. What to speak of the dangers of simply trying to walk on the road, that the real opulence in life was seen by natural resources, as they are described in the palace of Maharaj Uttanapad. There was opulence. They did not have electricity to light the buildings. The building was lit simply by having jewels stuck on the walls, simply from the illumination of jewels. Just the other day, I had the opportunity to go to Jaipur, and I was on the way to the temple of Radha Govinda. We passed the city museum where the king of Jaipur used to live, and they had a picture portraying the residence of the king of Jaipur. And it's very similar, that you could see the illumination of the room. It was not some dark, dingy room, but it was illuminated with the help of many jewels and mirrors. People did not depend on things like electric cables and ugly big power stations, smoking fume, or even worse still, having nuclear generators and then so much nuclear waste to dump somewhere and to give a headache for people in the future. As they do nowadays, you know, they have nuclear waste, oh, we'll put it in the sea. And we won't have to worry about it for 30 years anyway. Let's worry about it when the time comes. So this is what's happening now, nuclear generators, and so many ugly things in the name of economic development. But the real economy is not based on simply nuts and bolts or microchips. As nuts and bolts changed into microchips. The real advancement of society was in making use of natural resources. The real wealth of a country is in making proper use of the land to grow food and taking care of the cows. And we see all of these things done very nicely in the other ages, but in Kali Yuga, sadly, it is all forgotten. Now we call the Industrial Revolution. A revolution out of sheer madness to try to give us more sense gratification. In the name of satisfying our material senses, we have made the world into such a mess. Prabhupada told us, he said, when he was a young boy, he said, Calcutta was a beautiful, clean city. Is there any clean city anywhere in India today? I wonder. It's very unfortunate that we have allowed ourselves to be caught in the grips of this trend towards economic development, in the name of economic development, which is simply sense gratification. Purpose is simply to satisfy our senses. So people, of course, deny that there was such a thing as Satya Yuga. You know, materialists, empirical scientists, and other such blind people will say, oh, this is all stories. Things like Ramayana and Mahabharata, they're not really true. This is all just stories. You shouldn't believe all these things. We know human beings only came into existence a couple of thousand years ago. Right? This is what they say. And they go along with, and they have their theory to prove it, right? Darwin theory. Evolution, right? This is their theory. But, as we say, it's simply a theory. Where is the proof? The apes are here and the men are here. Where do we see the apes becoming men? We see the men becoming apes, but where do the apes become men? The society, the world is not evolving. It is one of our Drutakarma Prabhu, who has done a lot of work in this field, he calls it devolution of the human race. The devolution, not evolution, but devolution. The civilization has evolved downwards. The original being of the universe is Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma is Adikavaye. He's the most intelligent person, the most pious. He's supremely qualified to be the creator. He's not some ape, imbecile, with no intelligence. He's the most intelligent person. So the beginning of the creation is from the most intelligent person and goes down to less intelligent. But materialists, they cannot understand these things. They won't accept things like scriptures. They say, where's the proof? Show me the proof. We say, it's here in Srimad Bhagavatam. You can read these things in scriptures. Say, oh, these are just books. Well, we want real proof. But even when proof is found, they won't accept. There's been so much cover-up in this field. So many different archaeological discoveries have been made. So many different findings to show that there was civilization, that there were human species, that there were advanced human beings on the planet many thousands and millions of years ago. But it is all rejected because this doesn't fit in with our theories. We only want what fits in with our theories. You have to go along with the norm. If you're a little different, you propose something a little different, it will not be accepted by the people who hold the power, by these so-called professors and different beings, different people in power. Atheistic governments also, of course, they're very eager to suppress these things. They don't want to encourage the people in religion these days. Let the people, there are too many temples, we should build factories, was said here, even in India. But actually, the real need of the world is to have a proper society which is based on religious principles. And where there are religious principles, then people have to have a proper environment to live in. And that proper environment requires that there should be natural resources. There should be abundance for everyone. The needs of everyone should be provided. Not that they have to all come to live in the cities and everyone has to learn how to use computer. If you don't know computer, then you're illiterate. People lived for many millions of years without computers. Their memories were very good. They didn't need to keep everything in the hard drive. But Kali Yuga, we're influenced. Manda sumanda matayo, manda bhagya hi upadrutaha. We're very unqualified, very lazy, unlucky, misguided, and never peaceful in mind. This is Kali Yuga. But although Kali Yuga is a very unfortunate time, we do have one blessing. That although we have such a short life, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come to make the process of self-realization very easy for everyone. That if we simply take to the chanting of the holy names of God, we can become aloof from all of these terrible things, this terrible age. We can purify our consciousness and understand our actual spiritual position. So, yes, Kali Yuga is an unfortunate time, short life, so many disqualifications. But the holy name is there, and that is the only process for self-realization in this age, chanting the holy name. However, we can make our life much easier if we pay attention to nature and making arrangements for nature's resources. Prabhupada often warned us that this modern society is doomed to failure. Just simply basing everything on factories and electronics, it's not going to solve the problems of the world. It's not going to feed people, which is the most important, the most basic of all problems. If we take proper care of the land and use it to grow grains, Then, by the grace of God, if we protect the cow and preserve religious principles, the Lord will be pleased and He bestows natural prosperity on the world. During the time when Lord Krishna was personally present on the planet, there was no scarcity in the world. The cows were giving so much milk that the milk was moisturizing the pastures. The milk was overflowing from their udders. There was an abundance of pearls in the sea, and people could all wear silk. They were not dressed in synthetic fabrics. They didn't have to use chemicals to make their clothing. They were using natural silk and cotton. Where is the advancement in this modern age? We are thinking, oh, this nice synthetic cloth and this fast food, instant potatoes. Huh? Everything is dehydrated. Nothing is natural anymore. We have to even purchase water to drink. Who could imagine that we had to purchase water to drink? In the future, we may have to get air the same way. Purchase a canister of air. Of course, we have the canisters of fresh air, right? They come with the fresh air, which is just some chemical thing. So where is it? You know, we're thinking this is so nice, this is so advanced, but actually this is so low, this is so ignorant. The real wealth in the country is in nature, natural resources. Making good use of nature. We need intelligence to do that, to know how to use nature's resources. When we act according to the laws of God, then nature provides more and more. This is a fact. We have to have faith that if we please God, the Lord will provide for us. We live by the grace of God. We don't live by the grace of some politicians, some political combination, or some industrial empire. You know, we get a job in some big industrial corporation and we will sell our life to them. In fact, that is the consciousness which is promoted nowadays. If you secure a job in some big multinational corporation, that from the moment you open your eyes, you should be thinking about your job and about your corporation, and how fortunate you are to be a part of their institution. But these corporations, they crumble, just as nations crumble, just as empires grew and crumbled, so also these different corporations are not eternal. We should recognize our eternal nature as a spiritual being. When we actually are convinced of our spiritual position as a soul, as an eternal servant of God, then we will work in that consciousness for His pleasure, depending on Him and making proper use of nature. Prabhupada encouraged us, we need to have more farming projects. We need to have land and take care of the cows. In the future, he said, when these industries start to crumble, people will come to us for help. We have to be able to properly engage them. We should have land, take care of the cows, and learn how to grow food, how to produce nature's resources. We cannot just simply go on depending more and more on technology. The happiness of the world, the prosperity of the world, lies in the gifts of God. We get the gifts of God by acting according to God's laws. But the world today is all ignorant about the laws of God. People are thinking, oh, you have to eat chicken to grow strong. If you don't eat meat, you must be poor. They have no proper education about what is the real food, what is proper healthy food. Everyone is addicted to tea and coffee. Tea, again, the more corruption from the British. The British Prabhupada explains here how they took the wealth of India to sit in the British Museum. One time Prabhupada was on a morning walk in London. So Prabhupada used to always like to use some neem wood or a eucalyptus twig to clean his teeth. He didn't use, you know, toothpaste. You know, he would simply take a twig and he used that to clean his teeth. So they were on a morning walk in a park in London, and Prabhupada spotted a eucalyptus tree. So he told one of the devotees, get me a little twig from the tree. So one of the devotees climbed up the tree and took a little twig off the tree. But one of the policemen, British policemen, came by and said, hey, what are you doing? Yeah. This is the queen's property. You can't break a branch off the tree. You know, it really chastised him for taking a little twig. Prabhupada said, he said, we have taken one twig, but their government has taken so much wealth from India. He said, they are the thief. They are the big thief. So, this is the idea that just simply, there was wealth here in India. And there is still wealth in nature's resources, the land. So much land can be used to cultivate, to grow food, because there are so many people here in this country. It is certainly a very great responsibility. But if everyone simply comes to the city, who will do the work to feed the people, to produce the grains? Because anabhavati bhutani, Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, all living entities subsist on food grains. So it's very important that we understand the priorities of life. The real priority, basic priority, is meeting the basic needs. Eating and sleeping, mating and defending. Nature's resources. Nothing can be made without the gifts of God. But if we simply plunder the resources for our sense gratification, then this will create havoc in the world. So, Srila Prabhupada also explains how Maharaj Uttanapada is going now to, he is preparing himself that he will leave the palace. He will not simply remain there in the palace. Although he has a nice place, he has a beautiful home, he is not thinking, let me live here and die peacefully. This is the foolishness of the modern man. They are thinking, I will grow old and I will die here in my home. But in the Vedic society, people would prepare themselves for the future. They would prepare themselves for leaving the world. Maharaj Uttanapad left home, went to the forest. So Srila Prabhupada explains, of course, where is the forest nowadays? We have destroyed all the forests. No forest anywhere, so how we can go to the forest? Therefore, you have to all come to the Krishna consciousness movement. When the time comes for you to prepare for leaving this world, Vedas say, panchasorvam vanam brajat, from the age of 50, one is old man. Death can come any time. You're supposed to go to the forest. So, you can't go to the forest now, but the Krishna consciousness movement is here. You should come to the Krishna consciousness movement and prepare yourself for leaving this world by engaging in the service of Krishna. The Krishna consciousness movement has established so many centers around India, and they all require manpower. There are so many activities, so much opportunity to engage in the service of Lord Krishna. You should all take advantage to come and hear and chant and glorify Lord Sri Krishna. Hare Krishna. We will stop now and ask if there are any questions or comments.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, you said, Krishna said, Anna Bhavanti Bhutani. And but nowadays people, some scientists, they are making like capsules. If we take one capsule, it will be sufficient for one day. And some temporary results also. So how should we convince people not because of that? And how should we depend on Krishna's instruction?
Oh, that he's saying? People, you're saying the scientists are claiming everyone can just eat one capsule a day, huh? Don't need to cook anymore. Oh, the ladies will like that, huh? Oh, the ladies like that? I don't know. Just one capsule a day. Well, it means you have to go to work. It means you also have to go to the factory. If you're not going to cook all day, you have to go to the factory. This is a scientist's trick, you see, so that the women can work. Yeah, this is a nonsense. This is a foolishness of these modern scientists, you know, that they're thinking, they're making these kind of claims. Just eat one capsule a day, it will provide everything. But this is totally against nature's law. You see, God has provided everything for the needs of people. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamujjate. Everything is here in the creation, necessary for our existence. We do not have to simply depend on the brains of these scientists for our maintenance, for our sustenance. Modern food, yeah, don't drink milk. It doesn't have a good taste. You should drink Coke, right? And that has a nice taste. You know, people say like that, you know, this is a kind of programming. But milk, no, you know, that's not good for you. But the scriptures tell us, you drink milk, you increase your life, increase your duration of life. Just by drinking milk, you get piety. Just taking tablets, just taking some pill every day, that is not going to satisfy your need. Our body has senses. These senses have. If you're just going to take one pill, then you won't be able to enjoy the aroma of fruit anymore. So there will be so many. If we're just going to take one pill every day, there's no need for land anymore, right? People don't have to work in the fields. We'll just simply grow, use the chemicals to make some pill, and everyone will eat a pill. We have to understand how to make the proper use, how to use everything provided by God in the service of the Lord. We should make the Rajbhog offering. We'll just offer Krishna some pills, right? And say that this is a modern food. Yeah. Well, they told me that there was some case in Vrindavan in the But Bhangi Bihari temple, that the pujari wanted to dress Krishna in jeans and give him a mobile phone and everything. But he got thrown out. Nobody accepted that this is right. People are not so stupid. In the same way, we should not be tricked by these so-called scientists. Scientists are also saying they're going to cure death, right? They're going to stop death. They're going to make us immortal. But the same scientists are dying themselves. They cannot save their own self from death. Let this man who's saying we can eat, let him eat one pill a day. Let's see how long he can live on one pill a day. How long he's satisfied. He's saying like this. He said, just all talk. The post-dated check. You see? Very soon now, we're going to give you this. And very soon now, yeah, big promises. You know, today I'm a poor man, but you know, I'll give you my check, 1 million, you know, 10 lakh, you know, you take my check, and after some time, you can cash it, right? Give me 10 lakhs, and I'll give you my check. Today I don't have any money, but you know, I'm giving you my check, and in the future, you can cash it. So this is a scientist, big bluffer, post-dated check. He's broke, he doesn't have one rupee, and he's giving a big check. So scientists are like that. They're saying, oh yes, we will give you one pill. You just need to eat one pill and you won't have to eat anymore. And we will give you will cure all your diseases. And so many big talk. But what is achieved? Nothing. Just look at the world. Just look at the mess we've made of the world. If we hadn't listen to the scientists, it would have been much better than it is today. The problem is because we did listen to them, because we have been caught up by their talk, because we've been following their thinking, coming to the cities, leaving the countryside, leaving nature's resources, taking to this industrial kind of modern technology, and we've lost everything, lost all our own culture, lost our own sanity. So we should be very careful before you start believing all of these big words of the scientists.
Thank you, Anand.
Any other question? So Krishna consciousness is offering a positive alternative. It means first we have to put God in the center. That is the first thing. We know it's very difficult for you to all go back to the countryside. But at least put Krishna in the center of our life. Make ourselves God conscious and understand the need to follow the laws of God and to live in harmony with the laws of God. Not to just be blindly imitating the so-called advanced nations, where the advanced nations are turning to the east, dumping all their failed technological systems on the east. Whatever they can't use, whenever they get tired of it, then they turn to the east and they dump everything here. And then we pick it up and think, this is very nice. Our cars simply created such a terrible environment everywhere. Prabhu?
Predecessors, they have seen the, you know, beauty of the Vedic civilization. Even if we say 50 years back or 60 years back, they have seen the people lived much more happily than we are living now. But then it seems like there is no strong preaching going on. Preaching means, at least the culture is not being passed. to the modern people that you are thinking that you are very happy, but actually you are not very happy. But people are not saying that. Rather, they are encouraging their, you know, their children or grandchildren to more and more get into this technology, and then giving completely a false, you know, false happiness. How is that we are not going to get into the same trap? Like today you said that bottle of water we are taking. Tomorrow there may be time that we may have to take a, you know, bag of, you know, air. So how we don't get into the trap? Rather, we can preserve that culture and then pass on to others that this is actually very, very nasty civilization, very suffering. You're experiencing great suffering, and you don't experience that great suffering.
Yes, well, we cannot expect that we're going to change the culture ourselves, but at least we can establish the need for religious principles, living in a godly way. That is the first thing. We have to teach by our own example, by the lifestyle of the devotees, that they can inspire other people in the same way. If we ourselves live in God consciousness, cleanliness, mercy, austerity, truthfulness, these are the basic principles of religion. And the more we encourage and teach these things, then the more the world can be benefited. The more the world situation can be improved. In first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada proposes that this should be the system of universal government. There should be no compromises in these things. Everywhere these principles should be enforced. There's a need to stop all of this intoxication, gambling, meat-eating, and illicit sex. These are the real evils of the world. And from these things, so many other degradations come about. So if we can establish the basic need for a spiritual life, spiritual atmosphere, if we can attract people to that, then it will be the most powerful preaching. So that's why we need more and more Krishna conscious centers, more and more preaching programs everywhere. Today we only have one temple in Hyderabad. There could be more. Hyderabad has expanded so much now. So many subdivisions are there outside the city. I'm told a new airport is opening very far away. That means when the airport opens there, people will also be living there. There will be so much housing development over there. We need to go and make Krishna conscious centers and preach all of these areas. We have to distribute Krishna consciousness far and wide. Lord Chaitanya's mission is Nagar Adigram, every town and village. So we have a lot of work to do. Yeah, the preaching is not just done here. We have to go out. We have to go out to go everywhere and distribute the message of Krishna. And so taking up Krishna consciousness is not a life of inactivity, but to become more active in the service of Krishna. And giving people some inspiration and encouragement and direction in how to become God conscious and how to improve the condition of the world. I think this is the most important work of the devotees today. Krishna certainly encourages this in Bhagavad Gita. He says that Nachatasman manusheshu kaschin me priyakritama. There's no one more dear to me than the one who is delivering that message of devotional service. Lord Krishna himself comes to speak Bhagavad Gita. And if we take up that work of preaching the message of Bhagavad Gita, then Lord Krishna also appreciates this. We become dear to him. So all of you have a responsibility in this regard. We have to preach, we have to tell other people about Krishna. And we have to also condemn the shortcomings of this modern age by ourselves, trying to reduce in such things as motor cars and microchip technology. Very difficult, because nowadays without even having a computer, it's difficult to have communication. And communication is an important thing to distribute the message of Krishna. Prabhupada explains, we are not so much against technology if it's used in God consciousness. The problem is that so often we see that the technology is not used in God consciousness. It's just used for sense gratification. We can use everything for Krishna. That is the real use of the technology. So we want to show people how to make proper use. Anyone who goes on the internet nowadays, they're surprised to see so much things about Krishna. Oh, you Hare Krishna devotees are very active on the internet. So many websites, so much preaching is there. It's very good. Yeah, we encourage that. We like that. But if it's just for sense gratification, then that is useless. We can use these things for Krishna's service. But we don't have to use them. You know, we can do without them. We can be Krishna conscious with or without technology. Prabhupada would go to Hong Kong. They met him at the airport in a Rolls Royce, and they rented the penthouse suite of the most expensive hotel in Hong Kong. But when Prabhupada came to Hyderabad, he stayed on our farm. He stayed in the little hut on the farm, and he was very happy. He was not thinking about Hong Kong. Why did he accept the facilities in Hong Kong? He told the reporter, he said, if I sat under a tree, you wouldn't come to see me. So, for the service of Krishna, we sometimes make use of opulence. But we're not at all attached to it. Okay, I'll just see what's written here. So someone has written, most of the devotees are behind to get a good job lot. Management companies and in other private sectors to earn more money. Rather than giving importance to cultivate the land and taking care of the cows, they want to do it because of insufficient land and cows. They are unable to do it. Can you explain how can devotees protect the land and cows? Well, we do have a farm project here in Hyderabad. There's a farm. Important thing is, though, you know, unless we have some experience, we may find great difficulty to do these things nowadays. We're not so much adjusted to live on the land and take care of the cows. You're only familiar with sitting behind a desk and using a keyboard of a computer. Often that's the case. So, this is unfortunate for us, but those people who do have some ability, you know, who do know how to farm the land, take care of the cows, they should be encouraged to continue to do it. We should appreciate this. Originally, of course, everyone knew how to do these things. Nobody knew how to use a computer. 50 years ago, everyone was much more familiar with a more natural lifestyle. But we've changed. In the same way, people may go on changing. And Prabhupada warns, it's going to get worse and worse. The modern society is doomed to failure. Don't simply depend on it. We have to see the real need, and the real resources are there in land, and think the cows, the most valuable animal, resources like silk and cotton, these things. Prabhupada said we should learn how to make our own paper. He said in the future you may have to make your own paper in order to print books. Nowadays they use paper to do so many things, right? Toilet paper, newspaper, and so many things they're using the paper for. How long can they go on cutting the trees? How long are the trees going to last at the rate they're using them now? The paper will run out. We may have to make our own paper to print books. So we should be aware of these things. And you should, you know, take advantage. If you have some land, you should learn how to grow some vegetables. Shouldn't think, oh, now I have a good job, I make a lot of money, I can just buy them in the market, right? Why keep a cow when milk is available in the marketplace? Is the saying. Yeah. But look at the milk that's available in the marketplace. What is the quality of the milk? I don't know. But in other countries now, I don't know about India, but I know in foreign countries they often have milk. They sell it in supermarkets. But it's not milk at all. It's just some manufactured thing, you know. It's not actually real milk at all. It doesn't have any nutrition or value in it at all. It's just made from some chemical combinations, maybe from powdered milk reconstituted again or something. So we should be aware of all these things. We shouldn't be so eager to take fast foods and McDonald's and all of these, you know, nonsense foodstuffs. People think, oh, it looks very nice. The restaurant looks very nice. It's painted in bright colors. But look at the horrible things that go on to prepare the food. How they have to kill the animals, process the meat, and then refrigerate it. And then they come and fast cook it for you. So someone has said, you said, if we are convinced that we are not this body, spirit, soul, in that consciousness for Krishna's pleasure, can you please tell me how to develop that strong conviction and become stable with that conviction and act consistently on that platform? Yeah, how to become fully conscious and convinced and act on the platform that we're not this body, that we're a spirit soul. You should act as a devotee of Krishna, as a servant of Krishna. Act in Krishna consciousness. You can become convinced of all of this by studying the Krishna conscious philosophy. That's the first thing you have to do. You have to come and take part in all the programs at the Krishna Conscious Center and associate with the devotees and learn the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. You will become convinced that you're not this body. The more you hear this knowledge, the more you will begin to understand that you are not the body, that you are a soul living in the body. And we will learn how to act with this conviction by acting as a devotee in Krishna consciousness. To do that, you have to associate with devotees. You have to learn how to practice Krishna consciousness. So therefore, the Krishna Conscious Center is here. The programs are here every day, morning, evening. There are programs. There are activities throughout the day. You can come and associate and hear about Krishna. And in this way, you will become convinced that there is a soul within this body, that you're not the body. We say this is a science, the science. So, you have to learn this science. You learn science by coming to the proper college, proper institute, and they will teach you. I was just reading nice conversation between His Holiness Jaipataka Swami and his mother and Srila Prabhupada. A few days ago, Jaipataka Swami's mother departed from the world. So it was described how his mother had met Srila Prabhupada. When her son became a devotee, you know, she was interested to know what her son was doing. And she came to meet Prabhupada. And she was saying, you know, my son has got a full scholarship to go to the university. A full scholarship, free education to go to the university. And he's not going to go. He's coming to you now. She said, I want him to complete his education. But Prabhupada told her, he said, yes, that's what we're going to do for him. We're going to complete his education here in the Krishna Conscious Center. Yeah. The real education is here, not in these other so-called nations institutes. Nation centers, where you're studying mundane theories and the philosophy of fools. Come and learn the philosophy from God Himself, from Bhagavad Gita. Hare Krishna. We will stop now. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.